When Chris Bangle unveiled his new look for the BMW 7 Series in 2001, he probably couldn't have predicted the outrage that the design would draw. The car's bulging rear end was quickly nicknamed the Bangle Butt, and the ensuing criticism was enough to force Chris Bangle out of the automotive industry entirely. Though, of course, not everybody hated the design. Some claimed that Bangle was a genius and simply ahead of his time. Those supporters might have felt vindicated when Bangle returned to the world of wheels in 2017 with a brand new design for an electric vehicle. Small and boxy from the outside, the aluminium vehicle appears pretty unassuming. Until, that is, you open one of its sliding doors and take a peek inside. Unlike the sloping bonnets or rounded headlamps or audacious spoilers of old, or even the bulging Bangle Butts, it's the car's interior that's the real focus here. There are four seats that can be rearranged like Tetris blocks, a pop-up 17-inch video screen, a fifth chair that can be added when the car is parked, and there's even a foot massager for passengers weary from walking. Although there was no explicit mention of a driverless future when this new design was first revealed, the shifting utility of vehicles was certainly implicit. At its unveiling, case studies showed the vehicle functioning as everything from a chill-out space for busy parents to a quiet spot to get some extra work done on the way home, or even a place for teenagers to hang out and watch TV. Bangle described the car as influenced by growing urbanisation and the reduced driving speeds and increase in traffic that comes with that. So was this a designer ahead of their time once again, or could this future be with us sooner than we think? And, perhaps more importantly, should other designers be taking notes this time? Welcome back to Journey Makers, the podcast exploring not just what the future looks like, but how we're going to get there. Each month, we explore a new question around the future of mobility. And today, we're taking on vehicle design, and trying to get to the bottom of what the connected and autonomous cars of the future might look like, inside and out. Exactly what the cabs of the future will look like is still very much up for debate. It remains unclear whether form will lead function or the other way around. Some suggest that designers have an opportunity to shape how self-driving cars are used by their non-driving passengers. Others will argue that cab design will be informed by what the vehicles are used for. There are some people who believe the introduction of cabs will lower rates of car ownership, and they say that as a result, it'll matter less and less what cars actually look like. Others, meanwhile, argue that people use transport as a way to express their identity, and so it follows that self-driving cars will have their own design hierarchies, just as cars, coaches, and planes do today. In fact, of all of the tricky topics that we've tackled in this series, it's fair to say that the design of connected and autonomous vehicles is the one where there's least agreement. But that won't stop us from trying to find some kind of consensus. To help us this month, we have and
my name is Sidor Zhang. I'm a vehicle designer currently based in Barcelona.
And finally,
my name's Mark Preston. I'm the Chief Strategy Officer and founder of Street Drone.
Few design disciplines combine the dual challenges of beauty and functionality in the same way as car design. And just as certain buildings, dress shapes, watches or shoes have become icons unto themselves, certain car silhouettes have been known to stir strong feelings. In 1957, the French philosopher Roland Barthes declared in an essay that cars today are almost the exact equivalent of the great Gothic cathedrals, the supreme creation of an era conceived with passion by unknown artists and consumed in image, if not in usage, by a whole population which appropriates them as a purely magical object. The vehicle that had spurred that particularly effusive thought? Citroën's new DS19 model, an iconic wheeled concoction of perfect curves and round edges. What Barthes couldn't have known at the time was that the DS19 would soon become famous for another reason, as an early experiment into the possibilities of driverless cars. Assistant curator at the Science Museum, Margaret Campbell, has been working on the museum's latest exhibition. It's called Driverless, and it tracks the past, present, and future of autonomous vehicles on land, in the sea, and even in the air. She points out that people have been interested in the idea of self-driving vehicles for a lot longer than we might think. The driverless version of the Citroën DS19 was guided by cables laid beneath the road surface and had a big hardware box occupying its back seats. Today, sensors, cameras, and smart software are used to achieve the same results. And it's for that reason that Margaret argues that when we're talking about the design of cabs, we should be thinking just as much about software design as what shape these vehicles might come in. Yes, as ever, the conversation around connected and autonomous vehicles comes back to safety and ensuring that people feel they can trust in these vehicles. It's a topic that we covered in more depth in episode 5. Vehicle design will have an important part to play in making cabs safe and making people feel safe when using them too. But it's not always a straightforward process. Margaret notes one example currently on display in the museum. The failure of this big red button is an example of designing out human instincts. Who among us doesn't feel the sudden urge to press any button that says do not press, or touch a wall with a wet paint sign on it? So if the devil makes work for idle hands, what can car designers do to prevent them from wreaking havoc in a driverless vehicle? Vehicle designer Sidwo Zhang has some thoughts on this. He believes that the way new vehicles are designed will have a big impact on how they are used by passengers.
What I think is that the future of the usage of driverless vehicles will be probably partially predetermined by designs. You could say the for example Tesla in their Model 3, they replaced all the in-car instruments with a single flat screen. And this, for sure, this design decision has dramatically changed how people use their vehicle and interact with all the functions. I imagine the biggest issue regarding trust when it comes to CAV is safety. I can imagine many people just cannot completely trust a computer in charge of their safety on the road. But design can certainly help to make the interior space more welcoming, more warm, more home-like to interact with. And in my opinion, this would be the most useful way design can help to enable this trust between the users and the CAVs.
As a result, Sid Woe sees vehicle interiors being a bigger focus for designers than exteriors, initially at least.
Just as nowadays how we design a normal road vehicle, both would be important, but I suspect that the interior might take a even more important role than nowadays. Interior is important because it's where the users interact directly with the vehicle. Because now, a kind of like a formula to design a driverless vehicle interior has not been quite formed yet. Right now, all the road vehicles that have partial or even very highly autonomous functions, their interiors are still not at all adapted to driverless transportation. So I think there'll be quite a long period companies would be experimenting with this and maybe even letting the interior taking the lead of the design. So at least in this period, I think interior arguably would be even more important in the design process.
Sid Woe believes that this would manifest with designers looking to create more personalised, unique experiences for future passengers.
From a design point of view, I think there would be more personalised functions designed to maximise the experience of each individual passenger, or even a shared experience. This could even be things like certain functions we don't expect from a standard road vehicle. For example, in a recent Volvo concept, they even imagined a tea machine, a tea maker integrated into the interior. So we could see things like this be whether experimental or not, popping up in the future of design of CAVs.
This could extend to more practical considerations too, such as features which minimise certain passengers' experiences of motion sickness whilst on board.
Right away, I'm already imagining the future of CAVs would probably at some point involve a speed control, or even as you enter the vehicle, you can probably tell the vehicle that you as an individual would experience motion sickness quite easily, and the vehicle would adjust its own driving characteristics accordingly. So functions like this, I think, would be probably at some point become mandatory or commonly implemented by different manufacturers.
But this doesn't mean that exterior designs won't be getting a rethink too.
Well, I think certain elements on the exterior will stay. For example, various functional lighting. Even though the idea is the CAV, the computers would take care of everything, as a moving object, you have to always keep certain elements that alert your presence to the surroundings. So like maybe like signal lights or this main beam, a brake light. I think these things will still exist, but in a different form. But what is very much of a signature on passenger vehicle is of course the mirrors. And already we are seeing companies are replacing them with cameras And we already see cars virtually that you don't sense the presence of the mirrors. So I think things like this would slowly disappear.
Mark Preston is the co-founder and chief strategy officer of StreetDrone, a development platform for CAV software and hardware. He takes a more lateral approach when thinking about what vehicles of the future might look like. He compares connected and autonomous vehicles to everything from iPhones to flying first class to hairdryers or even how people choose where to get a coffee from. While he admits that it's the interior experience that's most important, he also accepts that people make assumptions about the interior experience based on what something looks like from the outside. Or, more simply, judging a car by its cover.
So design seems to always matter. You know, we all like stylish houses, stylish places, and we follow style and design cues. I'm imagining that the vehicle that is your kind of favourite style, i.e. if you go with a Soho house, if you know Soho houses, if you go with a Starbucks or you go with a particular type of experience, then maybe the exterior does have some elements of style to it to let you know it is the Starbucks vehicle or it is a DHL delivery vehicle. There'll be some aspects to it. I'm imagining the very high-end ones, the equivalent of a Rolls-Royce of some sort, probably will look dramatic on the outside, just to show off that this is a very special autonomous car. But I imagine it's going to be more about the interior as it is with business class travel, for example.
In this way, Mark disagrees to some extent with Sidwom. He argues that the purpose, function, or intended passenger of the vehicle will play a bigger role in defining what each vehicle looks like, rather than the other way around. This is a concept that he refers to as the form factor, and argues that, to begin with at least, what we use CAVs for will be the starting point for their designs.
The form factor concept is just saying what is the form of the vehicle, and it's just saying that, you know, different form factors, is it a box, is it a bus, is it a, how many people does it have to carry, does it have to carry logistics, does it have to carry people, the form of it will differ. And so I think that people are searching for use cases for autonomous vehicles that make sense at the moment and form factors. So putting the two things together, what type of vehicle fits with what type of business model? That's what everyone's trying to grapple with at the moment. There isn't an answer to it right this minute, but I do believe they'll end up being, just with normal vehicles now, you'll have the size of a train, which is to do with how many people per hour you can carry through down a track, for example. In a bus, you can carry a certain amount of people, but in the night, it's probably not worthwhile running such a huge bus in the night. So I do believe there'll be different sizes because there's no point in running just, you know, one type of vehicle all the time. There'll be optimization of which one's the best one.
One surprising way that Mark says CAV designs will differ from current vehicles is to do with safety. And no, it doesn't involve any big red buttons. As we've learned in previous episodes, one of the main benefits of fully functioning CAVs will be their ability to avoid unnecessary crashes.
I started off in my career doing crash testing. And one element of a current car is that there's a lot of features on a car in order to protect you from that, I'll call it, one-off extreme event, i.e. a crash, an accident. Theoretically, those things can go away on an autonomous car because eventually you don't expect autonomous cars to have the type of random accidents that happen nowadays. Therefore, the car will be lighter. It won't need as much of the active or even passive safety that a current vehicle does. So that'll allow some differences also in design.
So we won't all be shuttled around in identical wheeled blobs? Or will we even notice? Time, it seems, will be what tells. When it comes to CAV design, what we've uncovered is something of a chicken and egg situation. It's probably fair to say that there will be cases in which form leads function, and others where design comes afterwards. Just as the Smart Mobility Living Lab is founded and run on principles of collaboration and co-innovation, the same will be the case for cab design. Designing cabs, just like watches or shoes or iPhones or hairdryers, is an ongoing, evolving and sometimes surprising process. For vehicle designer Sid Woe, who finds himself at the forefront of this journey, quite literally designing the future is an exciting prospect.
I just wish it could happen even faster.
Big thanks to the big brains that joined us on this episode, Margaret, Sidwo and Mark. And thank you, of course, for listening. You'll find Journey Makers wherever you usually get your podcasts, and you can tweet us with your thoughts at SMLL_London. Until next time, see you in the future. How will you be getting there?